The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 569, recorded on April 7th, 2020.
Welcome to the 569th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 402nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Okay. So, you know, what's interesting about Resident Evil 3, TJ, is that it's not getting universal praise.
Yeah. It's been a divisive game.
I mean, the main complaint is that it's too short and too boring.
Boring, I don't understand. Like, it is 6 hours, and, like, the replayability is in the fact that, like, you can buy certain weapons and items that you can just have in the item box on the next one. It's not like Resident Evil 2, where you had two scenarios and you could play through them with each character. It is just one story. And it doesn't have separate endings. So, surprise, that's what I've been playing, Resident Evil 3 Remake. And
oh, by the way, and also I heard that Resistance is getting trashed.
See, and, like, I understand why. These are all things where, like, I enjoy the games, but I understand why other people might not. Resident Evil Resistance is... It's a four versus one, like Dead by Daylight, yeah. or Friday the 13th.
Revolve, yeah.
And one of the issues right now, and this might be just because it's a very early game, and people just haven't figured out the tricks. It's much easier to play as the Mastermind than it is to play as the Survivors. It's very
well. That's not a surprise. Come on, I mean the same complaint was leveled at Evolve.
Yes, and in my experience, like, I have won a game at the game, so I know it's possible. I think it really is just a lot of people are getting into this early. They don't know where the niches lie. They don't know how to do it fast and efficiently. We're just kind of a bunch of dipshits floundering around while one person who doesn't have to coordinate with anyone just annihilates everybody there. And I think that's always the case with these games, where it's much, much easier to be on the Mastermind side, where you don't have to rely on other people as opposed to being the Survivor. That said, there are some things with the Mastermind that feel like supremely... They feel a little bit unfair, in my opinion. Like, the Mastermind can spawn... Their whole trick in this game is that they move from camera to camera, eyeing the Survivors and where they're going, and they can spawn different creatures and different traps in the area. And in the case of certain monsters, they can take control. They can take direct control of them. Now, where that becomes a matter of annoyance is, like, there's one of the Masterminds has an armored zombie, and as far as I can tell right now, I can't. There's really no way to stun the zombie. You have to shoot it in the head or hit it with blunt objects, and it doesn't seem to, like, be stunned by anything. And that's just a bit too strong for a freaking zombie.
You know, I mean, in other games which have a similar mechanic, usually have a blind spot, you know? Like, when you're playing as a serial killer in either Friday the 13th or Dead by Daylight, they can only see you when you're being loud, you know? Like, when you're trying to start the engine, it's like, oh, now he knows where you are, which is why you have to hurry up, because you're advertising where you are. If the Mastermind can see everything, then there's no challenge. I mean, I remember the it's not quite an equivalent, but you remember the Splinter Cell multiplayer?
Mm-hmm.
When you had spies versus soldiers? And the entire point was that as a spy, if they found out where you were, that was it. You're dead.
Yeah. right now it feels like there are some masterminds that are weaker than others, but there are ones that have, like, for anyone who played Evolve, everyone knows about the Wraith. The Wraith kind of ruined the game. It was a monster in Evolve that was just, it was too hard to kill. And it had too low of a skill cap to where, like, you could literally just, like, jump into the game, play the Wraith. So what we end up with, anyone who played Evolve knows the Wraith. It was just too strong. And, like, it made the game nearly impossible because everyone would just pick the Wraith, because there's no reason to not pick the Wraith if you want to win. And I'm starting to see immediately right off the bat there is a mastermind like that in Resident Evil. There are four different masterminds to choose from, and they all control different types of monsters. And there's one mastermind that already seems to be standing out from the rest as kind of like the Wraith of Resident Evil Resistance, which is not good for that kind of strong arming to exist this early in a game. It's only 3 days old. So I have hopes for it, and I don't know that Capcom will support it. I don't know if they'll, like, put things into it and back it and put new content into it, or if they'll just move on to making Resident Evil, the next Resident Evil 8 or Resident Evil remake. But I kind of hope they do, because it does have that kind of jank of a early 4v1, and I would love to see them put more characters in it. I mean, I think it would be really fun if, like, they made it all the way to a Resident Evil 4 remake and they were still supporting Resident Evil Resistance, and you had Salazar as a mastermind and Leon as a survivor. That would be really fun to me. So we'll see.
We do have Resident Evil news, but that'll have to wait.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I like Resident Evil 3, though. I think it's very good. I think it's a very strong linear narrative. I see where people are saying it's short, but I mean, the original Resident Evil 3 was also short compared to Resident Evil 2. So it's kind of a situation of, I mean, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. But, like, I think it's a pretty good game, and I think it's what I wanted it to be.
I just want them to patch in Unbreakable Knives to RE2.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? But it's kind of like a mechanic there, where you use the knife to break out of a situation.
And just make it a harder difficulty level.
Yeah.
Where your knives do break.
It would be cool if you could, like, have a setting where either the knives are breakable and you can use them as a get out of bite free card, or they're unbreakable and you can't use them that way.
No, you just try to chop. You have to stealth all the zombies.
Your knife is unbreakable, but when you get caught, you have to take the bite and take the extra damage.
Okay, so we talked about what TJ is obviously playing, and I'm pretty sure Scott has more Animal Crossing stories.
I do. I also played some demos. Final Fantasy VII Remake demo came out, was made available on the PlayStation 4, so you could try out the game, and it was a lot of fun, and I just really got immersed into it again right away, you know, listening to Barrett and Cloud talk to each other, and also the other characters that were in the little terrorist group. And it's like, again, it's an action-based game, so you're giving commands to Cloud to do attacks, as specials, or cast spells, or use items, and it all happens in real time. And you just pause to issue a command, and then he does the command. And it's a very tough, challenging game, especially the boss, the Scorpion boss, which has like three phases of a fight to do. So that was very tough. And the game also comes with a classic mode if you want to do turn-based instead of the real-time action. And
here's the thing before you go on. Those who don't know, Resident Evil 7 Remake makes the game look more in lines of the recent Resident Evils, like 15 and 13, you know. Some, you know, realistic enough, so it looks like a modern game.
Do you think Capcom is too into the doing Resident Evil that they wouldn't go back to Breath of Fire?
I don't think so. I mean, here's the thing. If they think it'll make them money, of course they'll devote manpower to it, you know?
That's true. That's to make money. And yeah, so in Animal Crossing, there's like two festivals going on right now. Is the Bunny Day, where you get to make a whole bunch of egg furniture, egg clothes, from various different eggs that you find. And you get them off of trees, rivers, and shoot them down from balloons. And recently, like, there were so many eggs that they had to patch it to where you weren't getting deluged with so many eggs, and you were able to get the other balloons and the other fish instead of just constant flow of eggs. The other event that's going on is the Cherry Blossom event, where you get cherry blossom themed items to make, like this lantern that's called a cherry blossom viewing lantern. It looks really nice. Has this pink like glow and black wood finish. Looks really good. And then there's, of course, a cherry blossom bonsai, cherry blossom umbrella, and a purse, and you know, so on. So you got these things happening now. They're going to be ending in April, and I think there's a fish tourney that I think everybody else is going to have on the same day too. So it's really kind of fun just having this cultural experience playing the game together with everyone and seeing people do different fandoms in Animal Crossing. I've seen some of my book characters that I like from various books be made into the game. And there's another one, somebody made Hyrule with Link and all these other characters, and they put the museum where the castle is, and they put their house where Link's house was, and they put all the villagers where Kakarot Village is. And it's just really amazing to see the creativity people can put into this game. So yeah, been having a lot of fun with Animal Crossing and some of the demos. And the Switch has some demos too now of Bravely Default and Trials of Mana, and a couple other games came out too.
You know, what's interesting about Final Fantasy VII is the reviews have been coming out, and they've been very, very mixed.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful, but bloated, one review says.
Bloated? Bloated how?
It's extremely uneven, my favorite line is that if you thought the original Final Fantasy VII loved its boss battles, this game really, really loves boss battles. And yeah. The problem is that when every single fight is the biggest fight ever, you start getting diminishing returns.
It's very uneven.
It doesn't make the translation to modern gaming that well. And you know what? I get the impression that people would rather just have, you know, play in the retro mode.
I don't know. I'm on the opposite mindset, because I see a lot of people out there that are really enjoying it. When I've heard bloated, I've heard it referred to in the side quests. The side quests are very grindy and very like fetch questy, Scott. And and there's a lot of them. Whereas the core story is about the core story is about 20 to 30 hours long. And I hear that, I've heard people saying it's very good in a lot of ways.
There's a problem there. Spoiler: it doesn't do the entire Final Fantasy VII story.
Yeah, of course not. But we already knew that. It's going to be at least a 2-part, maybe a 3-part game. This first section goes all the way from the beginning of Midgar to the end of Midgar. And that was the reason why I wonder if it'll be a 3-part game, even though I've heard them saying it's a 2-part game, is that that is the length of the first disc in Final Fantasy VII in the original, which was a 3-disc game. The entire first disc was Midgar. Now, I don't know if they can stuff the rest of it into one more game, but it would be interesting. That said, it's the core here is a 20 to 30 hour story, and I've heard that it's very good. I've heard that there's some slight differences that people have complained about. It's not entirely faithful to the original Final Fantasy VII story. They did some new story beats.
Here's the problem I'm hearing is that people are going to wonder, why was this such a big deal? It doesn't translate. There's a bit of a nostalgia filter. I mean, people who played the original Final Fantasy VII may enjoy it a little bit more, but it's sort of like playing Final Fantasy XIII. People come out saying, okay, and that is memorable. Why?
Hmm. There are some issues here. First, Final Fantasy XIII is not Final Fantasy VII.
No, but here's the thing, though. There's such a thing as nostalgia filter. I remember people who play GoldenEye 007 again, the original, come away thinking, Jesus Christ, that was a piece of crap. You know? It's not quite the same thing with Final Fantasy VII, but here... The thing is that some things are just of their time.
I would agree with that. I would say that if somebody brought back all of Final Fantasy... Well, they have brought back all of Final Fantasy VII.
Yes. Seven is the last to have its remake.
I haven't played the classic mode, but the new mode that they have is totally different and very action, and I thought would appeal to action players.
But people had the same thing about Shenmue.
This isn't Shenmue either. I was playing through it, and I got to the Scorpion boss, and only the Scorpion boss felt like the biggest fight ever. I mean, the game tells you certain tactics to use to make your battling easier.
I don't think that's in the game, though. I think that's only part of the tutorial.
Yeah, there's definitely the tutorial. If you're not following the tutorial, you might be missing tricks that you should be implementing to make the battles a little bit easier for you. I know each character has like two modes, and they have various special abilities that you have to use. So it makes certain enemies easier to deal with if you're using those abilities. But you know, I only got to the Scorpion boss, and I thought that this was a really refreshing take on the game. That's just it.
You know, if you're a fan of Final Fantasy VII, you'll enjoy it as a remix. You know,
okay.
You're going to enjoy the game, I'm pretty sure. It's just that it's not going to convince a lot of other people that it's anything special. You know?
Well, then maybe if they didn't like Final Fantasy VII RPGs or whatever, then
the thing is that you can have people who are going to try it because they want to see what the big deal is about, you know?
Right.
There are a few games that, you know, surpass their... I mean, let me give you an example. Dragon Quest? I found that Dragon Quest is able to transcend, you know, to people who aren't really into JRPGs. I find they always have something good to say about Dragon Quest, something like Dragon Quest XI, you know. My first Dragon Quest was number 9, which was on the handheld. So.
Yeah, mine was Dragon Quest 1, and I played all of them, and I really loved 11, and it was a good nostalgia feeling, too, with it. I mean, they had all the sound effects.
Well, it was also very different than the other Dragon Quests.
Each Dragon Quest did something different, actually. But with Final Fantasy VII, it is doing something different again. And I'm really looking forward to what you do outside of Midgar, because I really loved the Phoenix Tower or Fort Phoenix campaign, basically, in the original game. And I think... I'm excited to see what they do with it now.
DJ, how much grinding is in it? You said that the side quests were grindy. Are you going to need to do side quests to level up your characters enough to move forward?
I've heard that you can go through the main quest without having to do the side quest. It's just that the side quests obviously give you a little bit of an extra edge because you do get more experience and you do get more items out of them.
Okay. I mean, here's the thing. Scott, I'm pretty sure you're going to get pleasure just from the interpretation. I mean, it's no longer these 16-bit characters, you know, they're a bunch of pixels. Now you have Final Fantasy XV level of graphics.
The Final Fantasy VII, original Final Fantasy VII, was like, it had three different levels of graphics to it, and they were more than 16-bit.
Yeah, they're totally primitive now. I mean,
it was primitive, and it was primitive. We knew at the time, Jonah, we weren't stupid.
I'm just saying, you're missing the point. I'm just saying it's going to be interesting to see the translation of the characters. I mean, you look at the characters, they're a lot bunch of polygons stuck together.
Yeah, I mean, but their character themselves, I think Barrett sounds better than what he did in the original.
They redid the voice acting?
Well, no, not the voice acting, but like the speech, what he would say and how he would say it. He sounds more articulate.
They get the same voice actor then?
There was no voice actors in the original.
No.
Okay.
But like he still had text.
Yeah, I was just wondering why. Well, here's the thing: when you're reading something, it may sound really bad if you say it out loud. So I'm pretty sure that's why they, it's not on the someone gave us up the. Oh damn it! I forgot the quote.
Someone gave us up the bomb.
Yeah, it's not quite on that level, but you know.
So the thing about Barrett in the original was that he was kind of bombastic and had a lot of cuss words where they would like put all sorts of different symbols in where the cuss word would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of cartoonish. And I think they went a little bit more serious with him in the new format.
Yes.
Does he actually curse or does he use a different word or just use a...
He didn't cuss. He just gets his point across without cussing.
In the middle, in the old one, his text box would just his dialogue would just be filled with just asterisks and ampersand number sign.
He's more of a person and less of a stereotype, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, he was a bit of a So, and then there's just the fact that like they change little bits of the story, which I appreciate a little bit.
I don't
bit.
Know what parts of the story they're changing. I know we're getting the honeybee in, apparently.
I'm pretty sure they're streamlining it and making it go at a better flow. Because Final Fantasy VII, it was still a translation. You know, it was still a localization. So they had to rejigger it a little bit.
I've read spoilers, and the spoilers make me think that there's quite a big something going on that they may, like, I don't want to give anything away, but what I read made it seem a little bit more drastic than just a little bit of a retooling to fit the modern era. I'm not saying it ruins anything, but I am saying that if you're expecting things to go about the same beats, then I can see where people – I think that's a little bit of where people are getting disappointed when they make it to the end of this. From what I've read. That said, if the spoilers are what I've read them to be, they also sound interesting to me, and I'm willing to see where they go with it.
You know, I heard the same thing about the original Mass Effect 3 ending, and I said, no, I'm going to have to judge for myself. Oh, it's just three buttons. Three different buttons you can press.
It's nothing horrific. Like, they don't, like... change it so that a certain someone doesn't die and you get to choose someone else to die or something crazy like that. But it is interesting. It is make me go, interesting.
Well, here's the thing. People that know the story over and over and over again, they had to do something to make... to defy expectations a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I like when they play around with things. Like if a remake was just a straight up 1-to-1 remake, that's fine and all.
I'm pretty
but
sure
like
you saw the remake of Night of the Living Dead, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the ending of the original Night of the Living Dead is very famous, so they had to change it.
Yeah, this is definitely more than just a remastering of the story. They're retelling it in a different way.
Yeah.
But you know what? Here's the thing. You don't have it yet, so you played the demo. When you actually play the game, you might have a better idea of what to say. So, I mean, you know, but I'm glad you had fun with the demo.
It was.
And you know what? Here's the thing. It's nice to hear there was a demo for something, anything. Demos are rare these days.
There's a bunch of them on the Switch. There was Yoshi had a demo, Toad's Treasure Hunt had a demo, and like I said, Bravely Default has a demo in Trials of Mana. So there's a bunch of demos on the Nintendo Switch right now.
Although I will say, you know, Game Pass is basically a demo for me.
That's true.
And
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'll say this. Resident Evil and Final Fantasy VII are probably going to be the last big games we see this year.
Oh, no. There is one big game. Well, I don't know how big it is, but there's one game I'm really looking forward to, which is coming out soon. Actually, there's two. Gears Tactics is on course for April 25th. I have it preloaded on my hard drive.
That's true.
Oh, wait, and another game that's coming out soon is Minecraft Dungeons that I also have preloaded.
That's true.
Yeah, I forgot that's coming in May.
Those will be fun.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be cross-platform, so, you know, Scott.
Right?
$5 says they push Cyberpunk 2077 back to 2021.
I wouldn't mind that. You know, here's the thing. You know what that would mean? Hopefully, there's less crunch. All right, now I hope they've paused development and every developer is getting a nice long break.
I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, Last of Us 2 is put on the shelf until who knows when. They didn't even drop a date on that one. They just said, we can't do it right now.
Yeah. There's a lot of people working remotely, but I don't know how many studios are willing to do that.
Well, the fact of the matter is it's harder for them to do, like, testing and bug squashing.
Yeah.
Also, what's coming out is sometime this month. It's already been done. Right now they're going through certification, but Super Mega Baseball 3 is coming out.
I can't wait. I really want to play that.
Yeah. I mean, I spoke to the developers. They're just going through certification. Once they go through certification, boom, it'll be on the store.
Yeah, that's good. There aren't going to be any certifications in Japan for a while because the CERO shut down because Japan declared a state of emergency. So games in Japan aren't going to get ratings until the offices open on May 6th.
So anyway, speaking of Game Pass, I've been playing the usual games, but I started playing Guacamelee for the first time.
Oh.
And it's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, it's a quirky little game.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like is that it's a nice combat platformer, so especially when you get to do your wrestling moves. And it's a good. I was in the arena for the first time, and since they're all clumped together, I got one move and just hurled them into like 20 other guys, and took them out all at once. It's really, really fun when you get really high combo meter.
It's really funny that like the power up in that game is just putting on the wrestling mask.
Yeah, and when you get there are different masks that you have. Like every time you get health up, you get a third of a mask. Every time you get a stamina up and all that stuff, yeah. And once I'm done with this, I'll probably try the sequel, which I heard is not as great, but still good. So we had a little bit of Guacamelee. Anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback. And I'm shocked we didn't do this one. I did a search, and no, we didn't do this one, because it's a 2010 game, right? But still, I had assumed we had. But here's the thing, I think it's because we talked about the sequel so much that it's sort of like, and the game was discussed heavily during episodes 350 and 360.
Yeah.
Sort of like, it was still during this podcast existence. You know, it mm-hmm. came out back in 2010. Anyway, the gaming flashback is Red Dead Redemption. Red Dead Redemption is a Western action-adventure game developed by Rockstar San Diego and published by Rockstar Games. A spiritual successor to 2004's Red Dead Revolver. By the way, I've heard Red Dead Revolver is really, really good. But you know what overshadowed it, right? A certain other game that came out in 2004 with Gordon Freeman. So what happens is Half-Life 2 came out, and it's like no one knew Red Dead Revolver even existed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unfortunate because From Out of Hero is a really, really, really good game. Anyways, the second game of the Red Dead series and was released for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 in May 2010. Red Dead Redemption is set during the decline of the American frontier in the year 1911 and follows John Marston, a former outlaw whose wife and son are taken hostage by the government in ransom for his services as a hired gun. Having no other choice, Marston sets out to bring these three members of his former gang to justice. The game is played from a third-person perspective in an open world, allowing players to interact with the game world at their leisure. The player can travel the virtual world, a fictionalized version of the Western United States and Mexico, primarily by horseback and on foot. Gunfights emphasize a gunslinger ability mechanic called Deadeye that allows players to mark multiple shooting targets on enemies in slow motion. The game also makes use of a morality system in which the player's actions in the game affect their character levels of honor and fame and how other characters respond to the player. An online multiplayer mode was included in the game, allowing up to 16 players to engage in both cooperative and competitive gameplay in a recreation of the single-player setting. Red Dead Redemption was released over the course of 5 years and was one of the most expensive video games ever made. The game received critical acclaim for its visuals, dynamically generated music, voice acting, gameplay, and story, shipping over 15 million copies by 2017. It won several year-end accolades, including Game of the Year awards from several gaming publications, and is considered by critics as one of the greatest video games ever made. After the game's release, several downloadable content editions were released. Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare, later released as a standalone game, added a new single-player experience in which John Marston gets fucked in the ass, and it doesn't stop happening. You thought he was badly treated in the original game? Undead Nightmare ramps it up. there was also a Game of the Year edition, which containing all the additional content, was released in 2011. A prequel, Red Dead Redemption 2, was released in October 2018 to similar acclaim. However, I will say this. I'd rather play Red Dead Redemption again than Red Dead Redemption 2 again.
Wow. Yeah, Red Dead Redemption was a really fun game. It was definitely one of those games that I felt like constantly kept you on the edge. Like,
yeah,
you would
because
see
those freaking pumas.
Yeah, you would go riding at bobcats and or you know whatever wildcat it was, and I would want to. You would see this nice like open field to go riding off into, and it just looked so beautiful. Down. And you would start riding, and then suddenly you this freaking bobcat just jumps out of nowhere, claws your horse dead, and you're like all wounded, and you're trying to shoot at the cat, and then the cat just kills you. That just like no, it's oh my god, the game was so brutal. It really was.
Well,
I think there was one time
they had undead mountain lions,
right? Which was even worse. And I think there was one time I was actually coming over to help, like a carriage that looked like it had broken down, but apparently it was just bandits setting a trap for me.
Yeah, they always did that. You'd have this woman saying, "Help me!" And
yeah,
you'd go there, and there would be two other guys, and they'd all pull guns on you.
Yeah, and they start shooting at you. Oh my god, that game was really brutal. The
my
thing
favorite
is though
of all time is punching a woman, tying her up, and then putting her on the railroad tracks.
Oh man, jeez. Jonah,
you get to see an achievement, you get the Dick Dastardly.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the best achievement ever.
Yeah, that'll do it.
So about that, then you have the I Know You quest, which I think elevated from a really good game into a great game.
Yeah, it gave a great air of mystery because you didn't know what the heck this guy is. And I think it does allow you to interpret it the way you want to, or at least you have multiple interpretations. Okay, and it's a lot of fun.
So this is a 10-year-old game, so we're going to spoil the shit out of this. So the I Know You quest, a series of quests, it's by a dark-haired guy with a mustache and a stovepipe hat, and he keeps on sending John on these morality quests, and he knows a lot about John that he shouldn't know. And the last one is great. He stands on a hill, and he says, "It's a great view, isn't it?" And John finally has had enough of this guy, and he yells, "Damn you!" and shoots at him 3 times, and it doesn't affect the this stranger, who just walks away and says, and he says, many men have, John, which leaves it so easier God or the devil or the angel of death.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know, and you know what? I don't want to know. Oh, and by the way, that hill where he says it's a great view, here's where I have to give in the spoiler. At the end, John gets killed in a final last stand, getting shot to pieces by the FBI, and his grave is on the hill, where he said it's a great view.
Yeah, there's a lot. That quest is a lot.
Here's the thing. Before all that, I mean, well, not after the after he gets his wife and kid back, there's like a 1-hour interlude of him doing farm chores that are mildly tedious, and about 15 minutes in, I said, oh, God, something bad's going to happen. You don't draw this out this long doing nothing without something fucked happening to you.
they really wanted to give you a sense of serenity, I think.
But there is no sense of serenity. Just the opposite. It made me anxious.
Yeah, because you knew it was coming, but some people might not expect it. I don't know.
Something was going to happen.
Right.
I mean, they did the really bloated version of that in Red Dead Redemption 2, in which, oh yeah, you play as John Marston, but guess what? It's another 8 hours. But shall we discuss the music? Because one of the other parts of Red Dead Redemption that people absolutely loved was the music. I mean, when you're riding home after the FBI tells them that they're there, I forgot the name of the song, but it plays as you're riding home. Do you remember that song?
I don't.
Didn't get quite that far. Got to the Canada part, I think, but didn't get that far.
Mexico.
No, not Mexico. It was the, I guess, the northeast part where it's just like a lot of buffalo and
a lot cooler. That's actually the Midwest. There was also the end credit song, which is Dead Man's Gun, which I think was the best song of the year that year. I mean, a lot of people preferred the other song. I'll look up the songs. Hold on. Soundtrack, Red Dead Redemption. No. Far Away. That was the name of the song. Yeah, Far Away. That's the song that's playing when he's riding back to his wife and kid. And they make sure that you have to ride a long way. It's like 2 to 3 minutes, so the entire song plays through. And, you know, it's very end credits-ish. Like, yeah, this is the end of the game, and then it keeps dragging it. Oh, no, it isn't. Shall we discuss the very ending? Now, we said that John gets killed. He gets shot up by the FBI, but that's not where the game ends. The game actually ends, you come back as Jack, his son. And he's grown up.
Are you still there, John?
Yeah, I'm
here. Uh-oh.
Yeah?
You can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay, you didn't hear me, DJ?
For a second it cut out. It might have been my connection.
So anyways, you come back as Jack. And he's older, he's about, you know, he's like now in his 20s. And his mission is he's going to take revenge on the FBI agent. And here's the thing that I found interesting. If you gun down the FBI agent's friend and his wife, you lose karma, but you get it all back after you kill the FBI agent. Meaning it's not penalizing you for cruelly killing his friend and his wife. And, oh, by the way, you cannot not kill the FBI agent.
Yeah, you have to kill Edgar.
You have to kill him. I tried doing... See, here's the thing. When you do showdowns, sometimes you can just shoot the gun out of their hand. Or even better, you can shoot the gun out of their hand and then shoot the hat off their head. Which is the FBI agent's name is Edgar Ross, which is extremely hard to do, but hilarious as possible, as you know, it's hilarious because the guy wears a dumbfounded look on his face after you shoot the hat off his head. But the really depressing part was that John explicitly said he did not want his son following in his footsteps, and that's basically what happens in the end. He follows in his footsteps.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I hate the ending to Red Dead Redemption.
But you don't have to hate the ending of Red Dead Redemption.
I love 95% of that game. I think it's the better game of the two. I really do. I think it's a really good, strong narrative. I think I love the I Know You quest. I love the conundrum with Dutch at the end of the game, because it's just like it's such a powerful moment between he and Marston. I hate that the game picks up that the game continues after John dies. I think that I've said it before and I'll say it again. Red Dead Redemption should have ended with John Marston being gunned down, and then Red Dead Redemption 2 should have picked up with Jack.
But that's just it, you know? That's an ending that's depressing, but I don't mind. Here's the other thing about Red Dead Redemption 2. No one is stupid in it.
Mm-hmm.
In Red Dead Redemption 2, everybody is stupid. It is a second-order idiot plot, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Well, that and, like, I always had this problem with Red Dead Redemption 2. I could never get fully invested in it because I'm looking at this character, these characters, and I'm just like, I know what happens to you. I know what happens to him. I know what happens to them.
Here's the thing, is that I didn't like the entire tuberculosis thing. It just felt cheap to me. It felt like a cheap way out. I mean, at least John went out heroically. You never get that. That moment with, oh god, I forgot his name. See, that's how bad it is. I was about to say Dutch, but no, Dutch is the biggest idiot of the entire.
Arthur.
Game. What?
You talking about Arthur?
Yeah, he's an idiot. He's an idiot. And here's the thing. He should have ditched Dutch like an hour into the game. Because it keeps on going the same way. We're going to get out. Oh, there's this big score to make. It'll be our last score. They fuck up majorly and have to move. They do it 5 fucking times in the game. I'm tired. Dude, abandon this moron. He got you washed up on an island where he nearly got killed because he was an idiot. I love what Zero Punctuation said. He would abandon him just for having that soul patch.
I like Dutch a lot more in Red Dead Redemption 1 as well. Like,
you know, I actually I'm pretty sure when you were playing Red Dead Redemption 2, most of my focus was on John because we knew where he was headed. It was just interesting to see what kind of guy he was during the events. I would have rather played as John during that entire thing. Why not play as John?
I mean, the other reason that I like Red Dead Redemption 1 too as well is that you don't really see Dutch for most of that game. Dutch is sort of a legendary figure that.
And then we find that's the Red Dead Redemption 2 blows that because now we know he's not a legendary figure. He's just an insane moron.
He's an insane con man, and he doesn't give up. And, like, it kind of ruins – like, how many times do you let this guy fuck you over? And, like, Red Dead Redemption 1, the whole point of Dutch was that he saved all – like, he saved all these people, and then he took him on –
He didn't. He fucked everybody up.
He saved all these people, and he took him on a legendary heist, and the legend is over, and they've been scattered to the winds. And Dutch is still sort of this legendary figure up in the mountains where the Native Americans are. And he's even all the way to the end of Red Dead Redemption 1, they keep that legend about him because when you get to Dutch, he's gone. Like he's just an animal, but he has some sensibility to him. Like he recognizes he's an animal. And that's kind of like the mystique all along is that they were
at the ending of Red Dead. Well, not the ending, but you know the ending of the main story. His ending, Dutch's ending there doesn't match what happens to him in the game. I mean, what happens? He shoots Micah. He looks pityingly at Arthur, and then. He just shrugs and walks away. How does that connect with him going off and becoming a wild person?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. Like, the whole thing of Dutch just, like, knowing that he's at the end of his rope, knowing he's going to die, knowing that he has led a life that he can't, that there is no escape from the consequences, and yet being unable to break his own... And being unable to break his own nature is kind of one of the best things about him when you finally kill him in Red Dead Redemption 1. It's a pitying death. It's a, like, this is the way it has to be and we can't fight it. And it leads up to John Marston dying pretty much along those same lines. Nothing changes. You can't.
You know what? You know, here's the thing. We could also compare the way Red Dead Redemption 1 and Red Dead Redemption 2 begin. The beginning of Red Dead Redemption 1 is really evocative. John's there. This music. I love the opening music, too. And he gets on the train. He's sitting across from these two racist old women who are talking about how grateful they are that the savages are being put in, all that stuff. It's like setting the time period. How does Red Dead Redemption 2 open? You're in a snowstorm. Okay. You're in a snowstorm. Oh, you find a cabin. Okay. And you find a woman who's been raped by this gang and her husband killed. Although I will say, you know, that character from Red Dead Redemption 2, I love her character more than any character in both games. Because she goes from this weak, you know, this ravaged woman who has nothing to live for, and she becomes a legendary gunfighter on the level of Annie Oakley. And I'm glad she doesn't... I don't even know if you meet her in the first game. I forgot if you do. But I'm glad she lived through the entire the second game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is the same character that you work with in the first game, who was a ranch.
No,
owned a ranch.
No, it's a different character.
All right.
No, she's a different character. I like her character, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was cool. I really enjoyed this game. I loved the atmosphere. Again, like I said, it was brutal. It was a lot of fun. It was challenging, and I always found it interesting because usually in Rockstar games, your character can sleep with hookers, but in this one, that was
John's
an option.
Man.
Yeah,
his wife used to be a hooker. By the way, that's something I love about this game after playing Grand Theft Auto is that the game puts it in your hands of what kind of man he's going to be. Either he's a guy who wants to be reformed, or a guy who will never be reformed, or somewhere in between. I always played with the John wants to be a good person thing, you know, ditch it all behind.
Right. And they give him good character, I think. A consistent character.
You know, when you play Grand Theft Auto, you play Saints Row, you don't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, you're just going to shoot people because it's like so easy. You kill people by accident, you're not even trying to in that game. By the way,
the one drawback, which I don't think is a drawback, is that Red Dead Redemption is also, and so is Red Dead Redemption 2, a really easy game. It is so easy to play. Deadeye just removes a lot of the challenge from it, which is fine because I never liked the shooting mechanics in any of the Grand Theft Auto games.
I actually didn't use the Deadeye in most of Red Dead Redemption.
It still had a lock.
Yeah. But it, I could lock, but I didn't use the Deadeye. I just shot at people. It was good luck. I didn't have a difficult time. I didn't have a difficult time with the controls, but I found it to be challenging at the same time because, like you said, random freaking puma jumping out of nowhere, or bear, or warthog.
There
was all
the
sorts
grizzly bears
of coming
were tough,
after you.
At least they gave you a chance. They gave you a chance to run away.
Yeah, they would snort or make some sort of sound and then attack you.
And, you know, even though it was easy to shoot things, you still needed the right gun to kill a grizzly bear. Your regular rifle
too.
Wasn't going to work.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, so the other thing is that even though it's a downer ending, Red Dead Redemption 2 is just dour. There was no sense of fun in that game. There was sense of fun in Red Dead Redemption.
It does sound like TJ's right, that it would be more fun to play as Jack, maybe more satisfying even. You could have him – you could actually, you know, deal with the idea of revenge and should you take revenge and, you know, all that that entails. You know, like reflecting on his father's own criminal activities and maybe – you know, did he deserve the end that he got? And maybe, you know, can I walk away from that life? You know, so that would have been interesting instead of doing this whole Dutch thing.
You know what the also best part of Red Dead Redemption 1 was? There was no Micah. Fuck
the
Micah.
Literal worst. Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Why did anybody put up with Micah at all?
He was horrible. Like, from the top to bottom. Just like a complete piece of shit.
Why the fuck did Dutch even pay him any mind is the question, you know? That's what I mean by it's a second, you know, everybody has to be an idiot for the story to work.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood it.
And not just an idiot, but tolerable of, like, the most bullshit. Tolerant of the most bullshit. Ridiculous. Yep. I could write a whole thing on like the way you should the way you could take Jack and take him from like early adulthood into like grizzled old man chasing revenge against the people who killed his dad.
I just wish you could have. Had they allowed you, I would have just shot him in the head. Just immediately. I usually am not a murderer in these in Red Dead Redemption, but I would have taken him behind the shed and just shot him, you know, execution style. Now, don't tell me you didn't want to do that.
Oh yeah, Micah was horrible. Like from like I said, from beginning to end. Who didn't see Micah being like the piece of shit that you're gonna have to take out at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Sorry,
by the way,
spoilers.
The gunfighter in Red Dead Redemption 2 was Sadie Adler. So.
Sorry, spoilers on that, but Micah is a piece of shit, and you eventually have to kill him.
Now, here's the thing: Sadie Adler did not appear in Red Dead Redemption, but she did appear in Red Dead Online.
Hmm. Okay.
Because she has the Adler Ranch. So, yep. Anyways, we're gonna move on to. Wow, that was a lot of talk, but you know what? Red Dead Redemption deserves that kind of the first one.
Yeah.
You know, the second one is just what's it called? Just begs to be criticized. I mean, technically it's a great game, but they need a better writer.
Yeah, it is beautiful and calming. If you just want to play it as like just riding across the plains, enjoying the scenery and all that, there's nothing wrong with that. It is one of the most gorgeous games.
Just watch out for those surprise bobcats.
Yes, the surprise bobcats and bears are still there.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the game news right now. Valorant closed beta rushes to 1.6 million viewers on Twitch, and this comes from some PC Gamer. The Valorant closed beta got underway earlier today, today being April 7th, of course, and there's an awful lot of interest in it. Roughly 1.6 million people watched it being played on Twitch, as Kotaku notes it put it close to the all-time record of 1.7 million concurrent viewers put up by Fortnite during its Season 10 ending Black Hole. Valorant just hit 1.7, so I guess it tied it. One factor behind Valorant's big Twitch success may be the way in Riot is distributing closed beta keys. Instead of doling them out at random to people who asked nicely, in the style of Counter-Strike Global Offensive souvenir item drops, they're being given to people who are watching the streams. That's naturally going to drive up the number of viewers, and it's also going to encourage people to game the system. According to .esports, eager Valorantines... That's an interesting new nationality. Valorantines are setting up multiple linked Riot and Twitch accounts in order to increase the odds of getting a key. Given that, it's interesting to see how the viewership holds up as the keys become more widely available, though there's no question that the interest is real and not just a rush for something free to play for a few days. Riot's other game, League of Legends, remains a huge success, and the studio's decision to finally move into something different after a more of a decade of League of Legends is bound to attract attention. Riot has been very judicious with Valorant's drip feed unveiling. We've had some hands-on time with it, but shared gameplay until today has been restricted to brief teasers and influencers event that took place last weekend. It may be a while yet before Riot is ready to start handing out keys on a large scale. So, TJ, this is your arena here.
Yep, Valorant. It's the thing that everybody wanted. Or is it? It's basically a hero shooter, but like people have described it as a lot of Counter-Strike Global Offensive mixed with Overwatch, but more on the Counter-Strike side. So you've got a lot of Counter-Strike players that really love the game.
It looks a little like Team Fortress 2.
It is in the way that it does have hero abilities, but from what I'm understanding, it's much, much more focused, like, gameplay-wise towards Counter-Strike, like good shooting. And the shooting is tight, the abilities come into play, but like at the end of the day, it's a good shot that will win you the game. And so in that regard, there's a lot of Counter-Strike players, there's a lot of like pretty precise first-person shooter players that are really digging it. Overwatch players are finding it a little bit more difficult. League of Legends players are finding it is not at all what they expected. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, it's a shooter, so it's not going to be a MOBA. Although that's not true, because Monday Night Combat was the first MOBA shooter. What I'm saying is that it's more of a traditional shooter.
Yes. But it's still like it's Riot Games doing a first-person shooter, which it has a really good staff on it. Like they pulled in a lot of really good developers to work on it from like the glory days of Counter-Strike and other things. And so they're working on a really strong anti-cheating system in it. So hopefully that works out because there are a lot of first-person shooters in this day and age that could use that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Team Fortress 2 right now having to deal with bots that slow the game down. That's the, mm-hmm. the other news that we're not going to be talking about.
Yeah. But yeah, it's closed beta. So it will be interesting to see what people come away with from this and how it continues to evolve. But it's something that people have been looking at for a long time. Like Riot, it was one of the worst kept secrets in gaming that Riot was working on something like this for a long time. And to finally see it in action and in a playable form is really interesting.
I mean, the weapons are very basically they're Counter-Strike. That's all you can say. They're Counter-Strike. They're Counter-Strike weapons. You have SMGs, you have rifles, you have shotguns, you have snipers, you have heavy weapons, you have sidearms, you have the sawed-off shotgun that's in every single screenshot that's ever in it.
Yeah. I mean,
and you also pay for them just like Counter-Strike 2.
Yes. It's got like an in-match economy where the better you do in a round, the more money you'll have for the next round and the supposedly better weapons you can get to get your ideal loadout. If you die and you don't have any money to your name, you basically have a pistol, which you can do. You can work with a pistol.
Oh, please. You know, here's the thing. When I was playing Counter-Strike, I preferred my pistol. My pistol was my primary weapon.
Yeah. It is like built like Counter-Strike where you can take the pistol and you can do well with it. Like you have abilities to your character, and as long as you're using your abilities well and doing what you need to do with your character and your aim, then you can win a match with a pistol.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, let's put it this way. Counter-Strike is getting long in the tooth right now. And people are one next big thing. And Global Offensive, while it's popular, I don't think it's quite what people wanted. They wanted a Counter-Strike 2, not a Counter-Strike Global Offensive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's still one of the most played esports around, and it will probably continue to be so because the hardcore crowd for that is just, I mean, they're loyal.
They're loyal, but, you know, they have to be getting bored at some point.
They're not bored enough to.
Well, there's no other alternative. I mean, they're not going to play Team Fortress 2. I mean, that's not their kind of game.
Counter-Strike, for the longest time, has really been the only thing that's really like Counter-Strike. You could say Call of Duty is there, but Call of Duty has its differences. Overwatch has its differences.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Counter-Strike is Counter-Strike. I mean, the thing about Call of Duty and those other shooters is that they can constantly reward you. Everything you do, you get a reward to level up your character. That's not what happens in Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike is a series of 2 out of 3, whatever, on a map. And basically, once the match is completely over and one team wins, wins the majority, reset, that's it, let's start again. There's no rewards. The reward is that you got to play.
Yeah.
I mean, there are meta rewards, of course, but I mean, you know, just in game itself. So, anyways, it's worth looking forward to. Okay, TJ, take the next one. I know this is something that probably you're keeping an eye on.
Report: Resident Evil 8 is a first person take. Report: Resident Evil 8 is first person, takes serious departures, and will be out next year. From Eurogamer. Aesthetic Gamer, a.k.a. Dusk Golem, the source of many horror-flavored leaks, including accurate leaks about Resident Evil 3 Remake and those not-yet-accurate Silent Hill leaks, Konami, as you might expect, refutes them, reports that the next installment of the horror series will be released next year. Interestingly, Aesthetic Gamer reports that the game started not as a mainline game, but was originally developed as a successor in the Revelation spin-off series. However, Capcom and playtesters were so impressed by early prototypes that it was co-opted to become the next Resident Evil game. Okay, so the little game is done. Aesthetic Gamer said, thanks PC Gamer. This will be breaking this month with more details later, not by myself, but I've needed to clear some stuff up. Resident Evil 2021 is Resident Evil 8, but it wasn't always Resident Evil 8. During most of its development, it existed as Revelations 3. Acknowledging that this differs from earlier from his earlier reports, AG said, the reason I said Resident Evil 8 was years away earlier this year is that last year Resident Evil 8 was in development, and that one is years away. But Capcom didn't want a huge gap between Resident Evil 7 and 8, so that title got pushed to the side for now, and internal testing and such was super positive on Revelations 3. The leaker also reports that Resident Evil 8 will be a cross-gen game, meaning it'll come to both current and next-gen systems. It is first-person, and many purists are probably going to hate it because it's taking some serious departures in the story, enemies, and the like. They later added hallucinations, occultism, insanity, and not being able to trust others are huge thematics of the game. If Aesthetic Gamer is right, there's absolutely every chance they're not, of course. This is just a rumor at this point. We should see Resident Evil 8 in 2021. I have seen some of what there's what people are saying about this, that it's going to be that they're talking about it as Resident Evil 8 The Village or something like that. There's going to be these witches. There's going to be
It sounded more like Resident Evil 8 Cthulhu.
It makes me think of what's that horror game that you play as a guy that's basically in the dark and you have a camera with a night vision?
Alone in the Dark?
Night
vision? Are you talking about Alan Wake?
No.
Is it that blind game?
It's the one where you're in a prison and you run from a whole lot of psychopathic prisoners. Outlast. Oh, it's Outlast.
Okay. Yeah.
It reminds me of Outlast. And I don't know how I feel about that yet. Supposedly, you're going to be playing as Chris Redfield, who is basically at this point a seasoned zombie fighter. Which, yeah, that's what they're saying. This is a lot of just like rumors up in the air. Everybody is like, I guess, throwing everything out that they think might happen, and it's just kind of a fracas to make sense of everything that's out there right now. But it is going to be first person, is what I'm understanding, and it is going to be similar-ish to Resident Evil 7, which could be both a good thing or a bad thing. If it's more like the first two-thirds of Resident Evil 7, that will be great. If it's like the last third of Resident Evil 7, that will be shit. Because that's where it says it takes it. That's where it gives you a choice that doesn't end up that, like, despite everything you're led to believe, it fucks you over so hard. And then it becomes an action game, which is stupid. The first two-thirds of Resident Evil 7 are great because they brought suspense back to the series. You actually had, like, the feeling of help. You're a useless guy in a house with a bunch of like mutant hillbillies
that can
easily overpower you, and
you're missing one hand for most of it.
Yeah, and I want them to go that route where like build the horror by giving you and from what I understand they are bringing back a persistent enemy that will make you feel threatened a whole bunch of the time, which is good. I feel like Resident Evil is at its best when it's like constantly making you listen and look over your shoulder and wonder if you're being hunted.
Right now TJ is having this urge to play Alien Isolation again.
Alien Isolation is one of the best Resident Evil games.
I always thought it was one of the best System Shock games.
I love Alien Isolation. It is a prime example of exactly what I'm talking about. Just like that constant threat of something that's always nearby, where you get only a few windows of like relief. I mean, don't overdo it, I guess. There has to be a cushion somewhere, but, like, horror games should be horror games.
Just don't make the same mistakes as Resident Evil 5, please. Don't set it in Africa. Don't go there.
Yeah. Well, right now it's looking like a cult village of witch people, so I think we're safe.
Resident Evil 4 started.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sounds... The themes kind of sound like Resident Evil 4 from what I've seen. Like, there was a couple images I saw floating around. I don't know if they were official, but, like, Resident Evil 8 Village, I guess it could be something like that.
Yeah. By the way, Capcom has been polling people on Twitter asking if they want to see another remastered.
Yes. Yes, they've been wondering if people want to see just like the next Resident Evil game or if they want to see another retread.
Well, here's the thing. The next Resident Evil game is the most popular Resident Evil game of them all, the one that's been ported to every single console in existence. I have no doubt that they're interested in making Resident Evil 4 remastered. But
False.
Here's the thing. Of all the games, Resident Evil 4 would fit being first person the best as well.
They wouldn't do Resident Evil 4 first. They'd probably do Code Veronica first.
I don't know. I mean, I've been hearing, you know, people saying, why don't you do Code Veronica? It's the forgotten one. We'll see. I mean, if they do Veronica, it's because they really want to hype up 4. Just make people just salivate for it.
I also think that we just need more time to before we do 4, because with the technology we have right now, I don't think 4 would make for a very good remake. I think once we get to next-gen systems and people have more time to, like, really stretch their legs in there and see what the technology could do.
People have had specs for the Series X and the PlayStation 5 for months now. That's not a problem. People are working on their next-gen games right now, and they're taking their time with it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I feel like that's... For a Resident Evil 4 remake to really matter, I think we need to get to that next level of technology where we're really, like... seeing vast improvements from where we are now.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking about Halo Infinite now, and I'm just dreaming.
I just think that if you did Resident Evil 4 remake right now, it wouldn't be much different from just a graphical upgrade. Smoothing out some polygons.
Here's the thing, if they do a remastered, it's going to be from the ground up.
Which I just don't think you should... I don't think you should do that with Resident Evil 4 yet, because I don't think there's enough to change about it that it would be good.
Okay.
Resident Evil 4 is really good as it is. If you just, like, upped the graphics, it would be fine.
They did like, that already. They did that already.
And I guess what I'm saying is that if we're going to take that route, the technology should be advanced enough that you can really make Resident Evil 4 pop.
So we're going to move on to the last news item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. E3 2020 won't hold an online experience after all. This is from Eurogamer. E3's organizer, the ESA, has revised its plan to hold an online version of the now-canceled E3 2020. When canceling the physical event last month, the ESA stated it was exploring options with our members to coordinate an online experience to showcase the industry announcements and news in June 2020. But this will no longer happen, PC Gamer now reports. Instead, the ESA will simply help showcase individual company announcements. In other words, as we have already seen announced, publishers are now doing their own thing or alternatively not doing a thing at all, like Nintendo doing its own Nintendo Direct.
Microsoft has been releasing what would have been at GDC like 2 weeks ago. Very dry stuff for gamer, but for developers it was really exciting. I mean, I showed you the video of Minecraft with real ray tracing.
Yes, yes. Given the disruption brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, we will not be presenting an online E3 2020 event in June, an ESA spokesperson said. Instead, we will be working with exhibitors to promote and showcase individual company announcements, including on the E3Expo.com website in the coming months. We are looking forward to bringing our industry and community together in 2021 to present a radio image to E3 that will highlight new offerings and thrill our audience. If you missed it, the ESA has already boldly announced the dates for E3 2021 to be held next year, mid-June.
You know what's interesting is that Microsoft recently, like I think today or yesterday, announced that it would not be holding any live events until July 2021. And they had to walk that back a little, but it's interesting that ESA would say, yeah, definitely June 2021.
Damn, it's like everything's been canceled this year.
Yep.
Well, for the summer, and maybe the first part of August, maybe August.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, the NFL certainly thinks it's going to start on time, so we'll see.
Of course.
I was going to go to E3 2020 this year, even though I really don't care. I was just going to do it to see if I could. I don't know if I'll miss E3. I mean, I enjoy sitting in the auditorium when it's Bethesda or Microsoft or Sony or anything like that, you know, just being a part of the experience. But other than that, on the show floor itself, I didn't care anymore. I mean, the pre-show events were where it was at for me. I was always hoping that Microsoft would say, and look under your seat, you have a free console! Just like Oprah. They did that one year with the Xbox 360. They had Xbox 360s under the seat of everybody who attended the Microsoft briefing.
Yeah. I kind of find myself wondering what they'll... Since they're taking this entire year off and they're sort of refocusing themselves, what is that revised, quote-unquote, E3 2021 experience going to be like? Because it does sound like they're talking about, like, basically taking a whole new direction on how they do the show. And I mean, like, it could be bad. Like, when they brought the public in, everybody hated that. Or it could be like, maybe they'll finally go the Gamescom route, which would be great.
I have a prediction. I think it's not going to come back ever again. I think last year was the last one you'll ever see.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's bold. I guess we'll see.
The founding member of ESA aren't even attending the show anymore.
That's true.
So what you need, what might happen, is the, oh God, I remember the disaster when they decided to split up E3 into all these little venues, and you had to go all over LA just to attend them. That was a disaster. So that option is no longer on the table. And if you only have it online, there's no point.
Yeah. I don't know. If they can figure out a way to do it like Gamescom, I think that's the one that would make everybody happy.
I just think they're on death's, they were dying, and COVID-19 just put the dagger in. It just accelerated the death of E3.
I'm not certain about that yet. Like, I guess I would, as we start to get towards announcements next year, I guess we'll know for sure. But I think, yeah, if it goes 2 years in a row without another E3, then yeah, I would agree with you. It's dead.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You know, ESA does need a showcase. I mean, as great as Gamescom is, not everybody can travel to Germany. And PAX has basically taken over, you know, a lot of what E3 had, you know, because it's fun, even for media members. So, you know, the thing is that if E3, I think it needs to be a celebration of video games. It's always been hedging in that way, but it was always an industry show. It either has to be an industry show with only select media members and publishers, or it has to be for everybody. It doesn't have the option that Gamescom does.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish I was sad, but I'm not. I'm not. I'm just not sad anymore about it. Like I said, fuck E3. I only went because I had to.
I wouldn't go that far. I still think E3 is a good time for a lot of people.
You know, your first time will always be your first time. My first time was in 2002 when they first unveiled, for the very, very first time, World of Warcraft.
Woot.
And when they showed the demo of a Tauren running through, I forgot the name of that. I don't even think it was in their native, I think it was in Arathia, actually. I think he was running just outside of Goldshire. But seeing the character model and the graphics, I said, yeah, that's going to be an amazing game. It's going to do it all. And I was right. I thought it was going to be a blockbuster, and I was right. I mean, there was strategy. Strategy First was there, and all these other small developers. That was the most fun part. Even the small developers had nice booths. I don't think Stalker was there, but there was other stuff there which I would never known about. Hey, I think that's the second E3 was when I... No, it was the first E3 which I first saw Tron 2.0. TJ's first E3, he got to meet the guy who created Rainbow Six Siege.
Yes. Which was cool. Like, a lot of things about my first E3 was cool, even though that was, like, the year they started bringing the public in.
Yeah, it was the last time that Bethesda, was at the top of its game.
Mm-hmm.
And people actually enjoyed being there. Although, I will say this, you know, standing there in the fucking crowd next to Michael Pachter, it's like, oh, God, you know, I want to sit down, damn it. Microsoft let me sit down. They had seats back there, but we weren't allowed to go to those seats. You know, they were up there. I can't say the rafters, but it was like a balcony, an artificial balcony above them. Everything.
One of my buddies got me into one of those seats.
Okay. Yeah, but you got me the mug, and I still have the mug.
Yes.
The Bethesda before that, I still have the figurines that they had. It was for, I'm going to look at it right now, for Dishonored, Doom, and Fallout, Fallout 4? Or yeah, Fallout 4. I mean, the packaging is starting to wear a bit, but I wonder how much those figurines would go for now.
Who knows?
But anyways. So yeah, E3, who cares? I know. Not everybody not cares. Some people care.
I really do believe that, like, next year will be the deciding factor. Next year will be, like, either they put up the best, most reimagined, most interesting show format that they've ever put up, or they trail off into the wind. All we are is dust in the wind. All things die.
Even E3. Walking down and having Microsoft on one side and Sony on the other. They always put those two together and you'd have that green and blue brightly lit walls next to each other. It was sort of like you were going from one arena to the next. Like there was a danger there. There was something dangerous going on. And Nintendo would be all on the other side of the center of the LA Convention Center. They all on the other all the way on the other side. you know, and they always have rows and rows and rows of machines for people to play on. For that, Nintendo was the most popular venue to go to because they would only have one game that everybody had to play.
Yeah,
I think it was Super Mario Maker when we were there.
Yes, I mean. Next year it will probably be the next Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild too.
I can't remember if they had like that big one this year. I guess it was Pokemon. Pokemon Sword and Shield was kind of the one this last year.
I don't know. I mean, I guess
2019 was all about Pokemon.
Because there was nothing else. Everything else, all the big games turned out they sucked.
Well, I mean, like, everything on Nintendo's end, anyways. Every time you saw the Nintendo booth, it would be set up like a big, giant Pokemon stadium.
No, I wasn't and there, I, so I didn't. And I wouldn't know.
Well, it was also... I had the luck and honor of attending both E3 and Gamescom last year.
Yeah, well, and, I can't afford those plane tickets, thank you. Not and I have a place to stay in Germany.
And both times, just like Pokemon was the Nintendo booth. The Nintendo booth was Pokemon. So that was kind of the one last year. I don't think it was as good as the other years, but like, you know, whatever. It's Pokemon.
Everybody, you know what killed it, like, E3 for all me, the actually, kids love it. When Microsoft decided they would have an off-site place that you had to walk wait 15 minutes to get in.
Yeah, because now they have like the Microsoft Theater sitting right next door to the convention center.
I mean, EA, fine. You know, they had their thing before the show, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, EA Play... You know, it's funny. When you're there, it's a lot more exciting than, because people were complaining watching the live stream that it was boring and stupid and all that stuff. But, you know, there was an energy at EA Play. I mean, you're actually there playing. And, you know, people are really happy to be there. So, there's always a different vibe when you're actually there than when you're just watching a stream. Because last time I was at E3, I didn't get into the Sony thing, and I just watched it, and I was like, this is sucks. I'm pretty sure it's like, oh, wait, actually, no. People who were there were annoyed, too. Because they had to get up, keep on getting up from their seats and going to the next venue for... Yeah, I remember hearing about... Remember that? It was for The Last of Us 2 and whatever other game was there. And people had to get up. They had to sit down, watch this presentation, then get up and go to the next thing to watch The Last of Us 2.
Yeah, that was 2018.
Okay. But I'm just saying, that must have been a bitch. That would be pain to do.
Yeah. That was the year that they did Ghost of Tsushima and what was that other one?
The one that came out now.
Days Gone.
Yeah. The one that became a big flop.
Yeah.
Because who wants another boring zombie apocalypse game? With a main character is just, you just want to slap him in the face.
Yep.
He's too cool for school, and he doesn't care. It's like, if you don't care, then why should I care?
His motorcycle was a more interesting character than he was.
Didn't they also do, what's-his-face's new game, Hideki's game? You know, the one with the fetus baby.
Stranding?
Yeah, didn't they do that one at that one as well?
I don't remember.
I remember them teasing it. It was either in 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look because like I can't remember. There was such.
I think it was with the one with The Last of Us 2 Yeah, I think it was that one.
It's hard to remember which teasers for Death Stranding were real and which ones were just fever dreams.
Because Death Stranding, all they showed was, didn't they just show a lake or something like, just a flat scenery and nothing else?
It was a lot of weird shit. There was an oily beach full of dead crabs.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
Yeah, there was a lot of weird things.
But then again, look who made the game.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Metal Gear, insane person, who writes like he's constantly wearing a tinfoil hat. Who reads Wikipedia articles, then derives the wildest conspiracy theories from them. I'm sorry, but Metal Gear Solid, I don't care how charming you think it is. It just hurts my brain. It hurts my brain as much as Devil May Cry 5.
There's weird things about a Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 that are like bizarrely prescient of the times as they are now. In the information age.
And also, like, I tend to think that Hideki is kind of polysexual.
It's,
his games also have this weird sexuality to him.
Hideo Kojima. And yes, there's always, like, gratuitous...
I confuse him with Hideki Kamiya for some reason. He's just as batshit crazy.
Yeah. Hideo Kojima is all about, like... War is terrible for everyone involved, and also gratuitous ass shots.
At least Hideki Kamiya is more about the crotch. Because Bayonetta just flies at you, legs spread open. And then you have Joy when she comes in. She just has an orgasm right there on the floor.
Yeah.
But... I will always love Bayonetta and wonder how she could have such a dumbass cousin in Devil May Cry. Bayonetta is like the Griswolds in Vacation visiting dumb uncle played by, oh fuck, I forgot his name. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're visiting their hick cousin. That's who, played by Randy Quaid. See, Bayonetta is Clark Griswold, and Chevy Chase and Devil May Cry is Randy Quaid. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast. You know, wait, hold on. Scott.
Yes.
E3 affects you, too. So, I mean, you just watch streams, so this is not going to affect you much, is it?
Not a whole lot, no. I mean, I guess I'll have to find gaming news elsewhere. But
that's really hard to do.
Yeah, right. So I don't think it'll be that bad. I mean, I do feel bad for the indie developers who don't have a whole lot of platforms.
Feel bad for indie developers. They long since abandoned E3 because it got too expensive.
Okay.
I mean, the only indie developer I can think of is Devolver Digital, and they're off-site. But the best thing about them is that for us people with media badges, it's free food and free beer and free drinks.
Right. Yep. That's good.
We had that podcast. I had that podcast live from their they always take up an entire parking lot, and me and TJ had one podcast just discussing right in front of Fable, that Fable mini game, that card game, that gambling game that was Fable based.
What?
I forgot the name of it. No, it wasn't. Quite, no, this is Fable, not.
Okay, Witcher. Fable. Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah. I feel bad for Devolver Digital. Where are they going to have their parking lot now? I guess they could have their own parking lot and just call it Mini E3.
Yeah, I guess they'll have to do that.
You know, if you're ever at E3 and you ever have a badge, I will personally take you to Devolver Digital. Because one of the best things is that they always have one huge-ass 80-inch screen TV playing one of their games. I think when me and TJ were doing a podcast there, it was Ape Out.
Yeah. It was Ape Out, and I think my friend Pedro was also hot that year.
I don't know if they had it on the big screen. If they did, I missed it. But I know I remember watching Ape Out. And the best thing is that they had kids there too. I mean, that's one thing about E3 is you can't have kids. You know, MA-18. no one will miss the. Oh, I wonder who is going to miss the booth babes.
Devolver Digital was like literally the first one out of the gate with the news that E3 is dead.
Well, that's what they wanted because they're constantly suing each other. There's a lot of legal trouble between those two. But, you know, I love Devolver Digital because, one, they're the gonzo publisher. They're the wackadoos. But the other thing is that they did this before Adult Games. Adult Games is doing the same thing, but they have an eye for indie games and developers. You know, I mean, Adult Games also has an eye. I mean, they found Slay the Spire, and no, that's Humble actually. Yeah, Humble Bundle also is good at finding the indie games, and so is Apple Arcade. Oh, that's another game I'd been playing. I hadn't played this past week, but I have been playing Duck Game. Untitled Goose Game, I mean.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. It's fun. It's a nice puzzle game. It's a charming puzzle game.
Oh, yeah. Untitled Goose Game? Yeah. I love that.
It's a charming puzzle game.
It is very charming, and it's very relaxing, and it's very... You're a very thought geese.
Yeah, my favorite part is when he turns on the video camera and stands in front of all these TV and his face just staring at it. There's something so cute about that.
You have a button specifically for honking, and it's just, like, so mocking in every setting. Like, it's either, like, yelling at someone or running away from them and honking as you go. It's just...
Well, it's protesting. I mean, when he honks at the farmer, it's like, what are you doing? It's like, give me that. It's mine.
It's just a perfect mocking sound, and like, the way in which you can employ it throughout the game is so funny.
But anyways, yeah, I mean, Apple Arcade and Devolver Digital and Humble Bundle, you know, and Team 17, too. I mean, Team 17 used to be just a developer. Now they're a pretty good indie publisher. You know, and that's what I like about Devolver Digital is they were the first. They were the first to be, if we're talking about, you know, you have Clark Griswold and Randy Quaid, they're the drunk uncle who wants you to pull their finger. They're great. And they always say the more violent, the better. Because remember, they're the Hotline Miami guys, and the Ape Out, Mother Russia Bleeds, and stuff like that.
Yeah, the new one that they've got on the way, the horror game that they're working on, the reverse horror game where you are the creature, is tremendously fun looking.
Yeah. That's what I like also. They have fun games. Fun and funny, both. And even if the humor is not obvious, it's still fun.
Yeah, Carrion, where you play as like a basically a tenderly horror that goes through the pipes and vents of a science facility, just killing everyone in your way.
Yeah. For some reason, I'm really looking. You know, that's the other thing. I saw a lot of tech demo information about it, and I'm really looking forward to Grounded now.
Yes. It's they went a little bit more into detail about there's going to be a story mode in there, despite the fact that it's a survival game, which I mean should have been expected. It's
like Subnautica, at least you know it has
it's Obsidian. It's Obsidian, so of course they're gonna put a little bit of their narrative in there.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, usually in these survival type games they don't end, but you know, games like Subnautica has an ending. This game will have an ending.
Uh huh.
Which is nice. There's something about just dragging on. I mean, some games can pull it off. Oh, that's the other thing, by the way. I'm finally playing Lost Ark, even though I backed it years and years and years ago, because it's finally a full game now. Well, it was always a full game, but they added a single-player mode, you know, a story mode and all that stuff. So to me, it's like, yeah, now you can try it. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And you can find Johnny also. Johnny. You can also find TJ. Johnny Oldman. That's why I called you that. You can also find TJ at Shaq News. And you can find... Scott doing the Polycast. Might as well get those things out of the way, too.
Yep.
I saw you posted a new video lately, by the way, Scott.
Yeah, which one? I think I posted. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Canis Albinus is doing that now.
By the way, I did try Civilization VI on Xbox One, and it's not for me. I think the biggest reason is it doesn't come with both expansions. When they have both expansions, then maybe I'll stick with it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.
And shoot me that file when you're ready, Scott.
I will.